Yes, I can hear you okay. Again, appreciate you joining the episode. Appreciate you joining the pod. You are the third of many interviews I'll be having in the next couple of weeks, man. So I appreciate it. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing well.
That's good. That's good. So tell me a little bit about you. I think what's really important for me on this platform is to collect stories and get a chance to know about people in their lives. So tell me a little bit about you.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, that's a loaded question. I'm trying to think so there are many terms that I have read about in order to describe myself, because I kind of have this joke that it's been a little bit tricky being me. And so there is the term multi-potentialite, multi-passionate, rainforest minded. I basically get very intrigued by lots of different things. And It took me, you know, this long, I'm now 39, to stop having shame over it, you know, having this feeling like, oh gosh, I can't just settle with one thing. I can't just focus on one thing, and really instead embrace it and recognize it as a gift. So basically the primary thing that fascinates me most is people. But I also am fascinated by astrology, human design, healing, body work, embodiment, neurodivergence, people living with dementia, creativity, arts, lots of different things.
Yeah. So where do you think this stemmed from? I mean, I'm sure like most people, it's like childhood. Was there something that kind of caught your eye young and it just kind of led to this pathway of just all these curiosities?
Yeah. I mean, I guess so. I think mostly people have intrigued me. And then I think that how I understand people has a lot to do with how I understand myself. And so I think I spent a good portion of the beginning of my life being fascinated with people, trying to figure them out, maybe even to a degree of needing to do that. You know, sometimes as children, we have to figure people out. And then I realized, you know, after lots of years of people telling me things like, well, you got to slow down, you got to take care of yourself, and me kind of going, I don't really know what that means or how I do it. Realizing, okay, I think I have to really figure that out. And then it became more of a path of self-discovery.
Yeah, 100%. No, that makes all the sense in the world. You mentioned something I think that's really interesting. And you kind of mentioned just trying to figure everything out and kind of having this experience with dealing with shame. How do you think you overcame that feeling? I feel like a lot of people struggle with that when you feel like you got to figure out a single path. There's this one way. There's these timelines. Like, how did you overcome that feeling and thought?
Yeah, well, I'm going to be honest. I don't know that I fully have. But because I think that, you know, I'll always have a back and forth relationship with shame. And that's not in like a doom and gloom way. It's more of just, it helps me to recognize that I am human and we all carry shame and it's going to come and go. And I think just recognizing, first of all, naming it, recognizing it in my life and having a relationship with it, I think has been a really good jumping off point. So I guess what I've done is I've been open about it and I talk to people about it. And that can be really risky. And I remember at one point somebody telling me, you know, you have to be careful who you talk to your shame about. And I thought that was good advice. You know, I always challenge the advice people give me. But but I think being really open about it and in a humorous way, you know, I think a lot of comedians are really successful. There's a lot of stand-up comedy in like all of the content is pretty much rooted in shame. And people laugh like, oh, ha ha, poor person with the self-deprecating humor. And they're thinking, well, I've done that too. Or, you know, but yeah, openly talking about it. Parenting has helped me a lot with shame. just kind of the act of raising a child and the child figuring the world out and their responses and their, you know, emotions about things, and me kind of caught in the moment live in those situations going, okay, this could definitely be a shame inducing situation, you know, me towards them, sometimes even them towards me, where it's like, okay, I think this is shame we're dealing with right here. But yeah, I think mostly open, like everything else, talking about it, writing about it, feeling it, locating it in the body, tolerating it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, tolerance is definitely important as well. You know, you mentioned comedy, and when I got a chance to kind of see your social media, I was actually thinking that you're introducing yourself, that maybe there was an interest, because one thing that really stood out to me about you is your personality. It's a certain humor that I'm like, if anybody really pays attention, I'm like, this girl's making a lot of sense, but also she's funny. Have you ever had any interests in comedy per se? Is there something you kind of dabbed into?
Yeah, for sure. Comedy is like, I even forget to say it because it's just, it's always there. Yeah. Definitely. I love watching comedy. I love, you know, thinking I'm supplying comedy, and, in my work, in working in lots of different environments with lots of different kinds of people, it's definitely been, a continual theme of something I utilize to just, I don't know, I think making people laugh and laughing yourself is extremely therapeutic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think I want to kind of go back to something you mentioned as well. Astrology.
Yeah.
Now, some people think it's taboo. How accurate do you think astrology is?
I think that if you just look up your sun sign, you know, you're getting nowhere, because it's really a lot more dynamic than a lot of people know. You know, you're talking where every single planet was in the sky, to what degree, there's nodes, there's this, there's that. So that the fact that I like to hyperfixate on things is helpful in a realm like astrology, because I like to go real deep, you know, so I won't just look at the sun, moon, or even rising. I'll go like, okay, what house is this and that? And it's something that has just like endless possibilities for interpretation and everything. So I take everything with a grain of salt. I can always understand why somebody would not believe in something. I have no sensitivity towards somebody saying, oh, that's a bunch of crap. I take everything that I utilize as if it resonates with me, if it helps push me forward, then I'll take it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I didn't even know about it. Like, I know... What sun was it, like a sun sign? Is there a moon sign as well? Like a sun rising, and then I learned about the houses for a second. I think everybody has had that curiosity. I do think from the science perspective, like Pisces, Leos, etc. I do think a lot of us do resonate with those. Me being a Pisces, there's very much a truth to everything about it. But what sign are you, by chance, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm a fellow water sign like you. I'm a Cancer.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, what do you think is a negative view about Cancers or water signs that you think people just aren't really accurate about?
That we're potentially overly emotional. I know that water signs are associated with emotion. Pisces, I haven't heard, and I'm not just saying this, I haven't heard much, you know, bad things about Pisces. Cancers, though.
Oh, wow.
You have?
Oh, yeah. That's what I was waiting on. Yeah, no, we get... Oh, God. Pisces get slandered, man. You would think... especially Pisces men, at least what I've heard. We get... emotionless, no remorse.
Emotionless, okay.
Yeah, emotionless. I think there's two sides of the spectrum. I really do. I think me as a person, I internalize a lot of things. I feel a lot of things, but you may not necessarily see it. It's very much a stone face. I feel like the closer I am to you, the more you may see both emotions, both good and bad. Manipulative, I feel like that's to each his own. I think that's more of a more of a choice. I can see how we can be that way because we do pull into our emotions and we can draw people in a certain way. We especially pay attention to things, but no, it's never been a good thing. So you're the first person to say that. So I appreciate you giving me some sort of confidence moving forward about Pisces, because we usually are talked about very badly. I usually hear a lot of good things about Cancers, though. I hear a lot of great things. The only negative thing I've heard is mean. I don't know if that's a...
I can be totally mean. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's like Cancer the crab. You know, you can be crabby, moody. You can kind of sidestep, you know, be passive. I've worked on that. I've got an Aquarius moon in lots of other placements. Aquarius, so that's kind of the... At one time, I remember looking at something about having a Cancer sun and an Aquarius moon, because they're kind of polar opposites almost, and how you're just like it's just one massive contradiction in your brain at all times. And I'm like, yes, that mm-hmm. feels to be me sometimes.
Yeah. So kind of going back, if you don't mind me asking, you mentioned shame and you're talking about working with your children. How many children do you have and how old are they?
I have two kids. They're 3 and 5, nearly 4 and 6.
Okay. So one's a teenager. Yeah, that's what I heard. A teenager and one is 5. So how do you help them deal with their emotions as people? They have so many emotions, and I know that, you know, one thing that's really important to kids is to feel accepted by their parents and being loved and praised. So how do you kind of navigate through that when they have all those big emotions?
Yeah. You know, it's kind of like the shame thing. I never say that I have it all figured out. But what I will say, and this is, I don't want to say controversial, but this is not how everybody sees things, but it's how I see it. I think that it's really important for a parent to show their own emotions to their child. Like a lot of people will just say, you know, your parent, you need to be calm, you need to be a safe space, and that. I get that. That's true. You know, you definitely, if there's ever a time where you really want to strive to be more calm, it's when you're parenting. Although the thing that people don't understand is kids pick up on everything. So if you're holding things in, kind of clutching and going, I'm calm, they're going to know that anyway, and it's going to be confusing to them. You know, it's sort of like when you can tell somebody knows or feels something and they're just not telling you. That's a frustrating feeling. So a lot of times when I'm having open conversations with friends who maybe even have some guilt and shame about, oh man, I really like blew up at my kid, or I cried in front of them, I'll just be like, I think it's a gift to be able to give your child the modeling of like, here I am, I'm going through this emotion. And then there's like the conversation afterwards, or the time spent after of kind of explaining it. Like, that's what I was feeling. Did you see me cry? Yeah. Cry. You know, I'll tell my kids, I'll be like, crying releases cortisol. You know, I'll teach them things. I don't always know if they know what I'm saying, but cortisol. And my son, he likes to be talked to like an adult, always has.
Really? Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's into that. So really, I try not to like completely hide things from them. Like, that's not the frame that I give it. It's more like, you know, the goal of definitely wanting to regulate myself in the moment, you know, but just saying things like, you know, I'm feeling really tired. Sometimes when I'm tired, it makes me grumpy and I need to take a break. And then also, if I notice it on them, I mean, every kid hates when you call them out on being tired, but I still do it. I'll just be like, it seemed, you know, you had a really long day. So it's looking at me like,
yeah,
this isn't really about the Ritz crackers. This is about something deeper.
You're tired. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. And then just, you know, and body work and embodiment and learning about my nervous system, acknowledging my nervous system, acknowledging that, you know, I'm even fully in a body. I mean, sometimes moms, you know, if there's moms listening, it's like sometimes you even forget, you know, that you have a body. Literally, it's this wild thing, momming, where you're in your head, you're in their worlds, and you're just going, you sometimes are on autopilot. So just kind of dropping down, getting out of my head into my body, recognizing those sensations of when I'm triggered, recognizing those things, you know, they say, you know, it's like your kids are your teachers, you are the student, you know, recognizing when I am nearly unable to be the student, recognizing times in my childhood where I had certain things happen around me that are equivalent to what they could be experiencing. And when that's happening simultaneously, you know, we talk a lot about healing intergenerational trauma. That's a big topic of discussion right now. And what we have to acknowledge is, you know, when you're doing it in action, live action, when you didn't even know you had intergenerational trauma until it's being provoked in you, you know, you really have to give yourself grace and not always turn to the one-liners on Instagram to be your wisdom, because they're not in your house, in your life, in your body at that time, you know? So
yeah,
you have to make sure to not use that information you're given against yourself.
Yeah. No, I agree. That was well said. You got it to so many different segments. I want to get into that. So that's great. So as far as, I think you mentioned generational trauma, that's such a huge thing from your perspective. How do you think we break that? I think we see it all the time, especially in today's age where everybody keeps saying they want to break generational trauma, but we're still carrying a trauma from our past. So how do you think we find ways to break that moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I always go back to it, those honest conversations with others. If people don't know you what you're experiencing, they really can't support you in it. So, and sometimes those conversations do whittle down your close network, because not everybody can have those conversations. So if you say something like, you know, I've been extremely honest with certain people and just sometimes even said, you know, there's moments in time where I feel like I literally hate my child, you know, and people are like,
no, well.
Well, some of us grew up in homes where it's like you couldn't even say hate, or you couldn't say shut up, or, you know. And I get that. I understand, you know, you got to be kind, but what do you do with those feelings? You know, what, if you're feeling that sense of like, in this moment, I feel like I hate you. What do you do with that? You know, I think the honest conversations and, a lot of mindfulness, and you have to modify your life. You have to, you know, if you're at a job that stresses you out because you want a certain amount of money, you have to sit down and ask yourself, is money more important than how I treat my child every day?
Yeah.
You know, is it more important than me taking some time to have a nap or, you know, meet with a friend so that I can sort of recalibrate? So I think it's lifestyle shifts. And sorry, it sounds like maybe a train's passing by.
Oh, you're totally fine.
Okay. It's going to get louder. We'll see.
That's okay.
Exactly what it is.
Remind me, where are you from? Remind me.
I'm in Minnesota. I'm from Florida.
Oh, okay.
Right. Now I'm in Minnesota. Now
you Minneapolis?
Now I hear it, yeah.
Yeah. I'm right by a train track and a light rail station.
Okay. I was gonna say, yeah, there, that is.
It's, See, that's kind of like parenting is like trying to record a podcast when you live by a train station. It's like, okay.
Yeah, no, that's a great example. I was actually gonna say Chicago. I didn't know Minnesota was a big train. Is Minnesota like a big public transportation place?
We love bear trains around here. No, there are a good amount of trains.
Yeah,
and we do have a good light rail system, so we do have the public transportation.
That was St. Louis. Yeah, we're not big into public transportation as much, ironically. So when people come here, honestly, the thing is about St. Louis, people think St. Louis is like this big cornfield place. It's a bunch of just like grass and farmland, but it's not. But not a big public transportation place. So when I always hear people say, I live by a train, I'm like, we don't live nowhere near trains. There's no trains there, most of us. So
just happy to provide you with this novelty.
No, this is great. No, I appreciate it. It was a great segue. So No, I think what you mentioned, everything is super important. Even the honesty with that, because you just gave me an idea about motherhood that I never really thought of. Another common theme I often hear about is mom guilt. Does every mother experience that? Have you experienced that? Like, I'm always curious to know, like, what does that look like for a mother to say that?
Oh, yeah. Mom guilt is real. Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, if you think about, you know how sometimes it's hard to leave work at work?
Yeah.
You know, and I don't want to say that momming is work, but in a lot of ways, in modern society, it kind of is, you know. We used to, I think, in the grand scheme of all of human existence, we did not, there was never this much pressure put on a mom. You know, we often live, like, women would raise their children together. I mean, women would even breastfeed one another's children, you know. Everybody looked out for one another. And I think that we like to say that that's happening in modern day, but it's not. It's happening a little, but really systemically, it's not as much. You know, at the end of the day, I think moms do carry both a lot of the load. And a lot of people might say, well, you're asking for that, or you're putting it on yourself, or that's a state of mind. And it's like, I've done a lot of reframing, but at the end of the day, we do kind of have to just admit. And sometimes it's just the way that we're brought up. I mean, or it's in us, you know, like it's in our DNA, you know. It's like, we can't help it, but to just be really, really, really hyper-focused on our child. That's what we're designed to be. And even like our child's cry is going to impact us way more than another child's cry. And so it's kind of like we don't ever get to just leave it anywhere. You know, like it's a constant thing in the back of our mind, is just like how our kids are doing, what they need, what they want, what their future is going to look like, what we've done in the past that could be harmful. It's so, nothing has brought me more into wanting so badly to practice mindfulness as motherhood, because you're kind of forced, like, okay, let me just be in this moment. Because if I go into any of the other moments, it's just so much thought, you know, should I be getting them piano lessons? If they don't have piano lessons, will they, you know, you're paranoid that you're going to, they're going to miss out on something. You're going to make the wrong move. You're going to cause them trauma. Speaking of trauma, you know, So yeah, mom guilt, it shows through overthinking. It shows through, all kinds of things.
Does it ever go away, or is it just, you feel like it's a lifetime thing? Like, does it get easier the older the kid gets, in your perspective, or do you think, or you think it's just, or say it again, I'm sorry.
Yes, I do think, I have for sure gotten a really good handle on the mom guilt. It has taken a lot, though. It's taken a lot for me to do that. So I would never want, I would always want to check in with someone's personal perspective, you know, and not cast any of my judgments on anyone, because I've been privileged in a lot of ways of being able to take certain breaks or demand certain breaks. I've got gumption. So, you know, I've flip-flopped my life completely around in a lot of ways since becoming a mom, because I've just, all the things they tell you to do, like create firm boundaries and find your happiness, find your joy, I had to do that because everyone was telling me that that's what it takes to be a good mom. And I had not developed the environment for that. I hadn't prioritized that for myself. And so once I had kids, I was like, okay, if I'm ever going to try to live as happily as possible, it's got to be now for them. Cause that whole happy mom, happy baby thing, happy mom, happy kid, that to me before, when I was on the other side of happiness for a long time, I had postpartum depression and mostly anxiety and any mood disorder under the sun, you can get postpartum.
Oh, wow.
I had most of them. Everything from disordered eating to OCD, even little bits of what someone could label psychosis. It all breezed through for me. So I had to do a lot of ironing out of what it meant for me to be grounded and happy and all the things. And it took a lot of work, a lot of modification, a lot of thinking, what am I doing? But by golly, I've gotten to a good place. So the mom guilt has gone from like having mom guilt, you know, 60 to 80% of the time to now, you know, 10 to 20% of the time will I indulge in mom guilt.
Yeah, that's good. First off, that was a lot that you just shared. I appreciate that. I always have curiosities about this because I don't have kids. And it's something that I think about when that time does come, especially postpartum in particular. I was actually just talking to my therapist about that. It's a fear of understanding an experience I will never understand. If that makes sense. It's the fear of what will happen to that said person, whoever the mother of my kid will be. How can I be as supportive in that space? Like, it's a very deeply ingrained fear. We kind of know it looks different for everybody. And some of that's just because of past experiences, but it's just like that part really just does something to me because I know it will affect this person for a period of time. And there's only so much you feel like you can do to help them through that, you know? So,
yes. I don't know. I commend you for even contemplating the topic, you know, before it's happening. You know, that I think that's a really good concern to have and a really good thing to think about, you know, before entering fatherhood. Definitely. I think that it's great to sift through thoughts like that before it happens live action. And sometimes it's not always about what you do. It's about how you be. Which I don't know if that's grammatical, but it's like,
I get it though.
Yeah. It's a being with, you know, the ability to be with. Cause I think at the end of the day, when I was, you know, I just call it sick. When I was really sick, it actually was very, I would sometimes even have very negative responses to people doing things for me. It would induce
settle.
Yeah, I felt like not worthy of it. And I felt like, I don't know, it's hard to explain. And the best way I can describe what I needed was I needed people to just be able to be with me.
Be present.
Yeah, just be with whatever I was, you know. And sometimes I thought that the doing for was, I read it as, you're uncomfortable and you feel that you just need to do something for me because you can't just be with me as I am. Yeah. And so, you know, that's my two cents on that.
No, I think you just unlocked something for me. I think, I sometimes struggle with that just with people when they're having emotionally tough times. I feel the need to want to help. And sometimes the response is always, I didn't ask for your help. I just asked you to be here. And it was kind of like, well, this is awkward for me. And I don't, you know, that's just my own. But that helps me better understand that. Because sometimes there is such a gray area. I just think the natural thing people do is just want to help. They just want to help out. And they actually may be causing more problems than ever. So I really do appreciate that. Insight. So I could be wrong. Do you work with moms too, like helping them with their healing and stuff like that? Like classes, stuff?
I would love to. I don't currently. For the last year and a half, I was with a mental health organization. We functioned under what's called the Clubhouse model of recovery. Have you ever heard of it?
No, I have not. Please enlighten me.
So it's a psychosocial rehabilitation. It's totally non-clinical. Basically, people come, all you need is a diagnosis, and you join the Clubhouse, which is some sort of building that you can have a clubhouse anywhere. There's certain standards for a clubhouse. There's 37 standards of how the clubhouse functions. And the members who join, who are in recovery, work side by side with staff. And we have different departments of the clubhouse to help people with like employment, wellness, culinary. We do like an inexpensive meal every day and everybody cooks it together. And so we basically run the community together so people can rediscover their skills, de-isolate, socialize, all that. And it was a great place for me to be in. We call it a launching pad, not a landing strip. And for me, career-wise, it was a launching pad too, where it just got to the point where I was like, okay, I think I'm done with this. But the model taught me a lot. And I would daydream when I was there. I'm like, this would be great for new moms that sort of want to reemerge into the world too. So I do have, you know, a dream, and I am talking to moms right now just in the community about creating something like that or a space like that. So I definitely have it on my radar to want to support moms in a way like that. I'm just not technically doing it in any sort of paid capacity right now.
In the paid capacity. Yeah, no, I think that's great. One thing I will say I appreciate about your perspective, it kind of reminded me of myself. I don't like doing the same thing after a period of time. It's like you want to go to the next thing and the next thing, just because I feel like there's so much you can do. And you're definitely reiterating that, especially with kids. Sometimes I think people don't think they can do more. So I think it is really encouraging to see somebody that has a drive to want to do more. So outside of that, what would you say is like your ultimate goal? Like if you could paint a perfect picture for yourself moving forward, what does that look like as far as what you're doing in your life?
Yeah. I mean, there's some core causes that are really important to me, like the environment, general wellness of all people. And with those side by side, I would love to see more just really creative interventions, both in, you know, urban and rural, where we can have people growing more food for themselves, doing more healing for one another, basically breaking out of this medical model. You know, there's a lot going around right now. Like we live in like a sick society, you know, where everyone's questioning what's in our food and our stress levels and our lifestyles. And so I would love to have, you know, sort of like a really reasonable commune. But many of them, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
People get nervous. They're like, what, do you want to start a cult? Do you want to? No. I would just love, you know, for like-minded individuals to come together and figure out, like, how can we make solutions to some of these problems that people just seem to keep kind of perseverating on, you know? Like, okay, let's get to it. Let's figure out, you know. So ultimately, I would love to be a part of helping communities just address some of these problems. And then, you know, my specialty is the umbrella of just like creative engagement, which is just and that can look like figuring out ways to grow your own food. It's really anything creative. It can be art based. It can be art that, you know, art often influences science. I would say growing food is science. It's an art. It's so.
It is.
Yeah. So. And then, yeah, just creative spaces where people can be themselves, learn and grow, cut back on the crap talking, the gossip, the this, the that, and kind of get more down to, you know, connecting, creating, collaborating, all the good C's. Connecting, collaborating, community.
Yeah.
Comedy.
Yeah,
all the
ceremony. Yeah, no, I think all that's important. I don't think every community is also a cult either. I think it's good when people are trying to put good things in the world, just to do something better. I mean, I think that was what made this whole idea so appealing. How a simple social media post turned into meeting somebody like you. I know before it, but having something to share and. I just think that I think it's great. I think you have a great vision in mind. I do have a final question for you.
Yeah.
What does it mean to be human to you?
Ooh, gosh. Well, okay. I'll just tell you. I recently saw, I think it was a TED Talk about this very, very intelligent teenager who was asked to study astrophysics at like age of 16 or something. And so he studied the universe for however many years and kind of got it figured out, which I think is funny. And then he switched to human behavior because he was bored with the universe. And he said that human behavior was far more complicated. And so for me, I think being human is very hard to identify, you know, and it is very, you know, for a lot of people that want to identify God almost, do you know what I mean? Like, and we like to reference God as he, you know, or, you know, some she or whatever, but, to me, I'm always kind of just saying they or it or the force, but I think that, and that's the relation. I think being human is being dynamic, constantly changing, and energy flow.
Mm-hmm.
And humility is key because of all those reasons.
Yeah. That was well said. I appreciate that. And I appreciate you taking the time to engage in this conversation. I think this has been great for those who don't believe social media doesn't work. It does. Yeah. Yeah, but those who can, if those who can find you, where can they find you?
My social media is Mindy B Playing. And yeah, that's where I be playing.
And that is your day. That's funny. Yeah, Mindy B Playing on all social media platforms. Mindy, again, I appreciate you so much for joining me on this episode. Super excited to connect with you moving forward and seeing all the great things that you do. For those who are listening, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite audio platform. Check me out on YouTube and TikTok, Threads, wherever you're at. And looking forward to connecting with more people like Mindy in the rest of the world. So appreciate you all. Until next time, peace. All right.